From Homestand Sports, this is Day Games. Day Games wants to thank our sponsor, HelloFresh. Forget takeout, HelloFresh delivers all the ingredients for delicious, healthy meals anyone can prepare at home in less than 30 minutes. Go to HelloFresh.ca and use promo code ANTIKA50 to get 50% off your first order. HelloFresh is on a mission to bring cooking back into our lives, with real, whole ingredients that are healthier and we can feel good about. They do all the shopping, planning, and deliver step-by-step recipes and their ingredients so we can relax and enjoy all there is to love about cooking. They plan, they shop, you cook. Go to HelloFresh.ca and use ANTIKA50 to get 50% off your first box. Hello and welcome to Day Games. Day Games is a podcast where we speak to people that work in and around professional baseball in an effort to better understand the daily lives of those working in the game that we all love. We'll be asking them what it takes to do their jobs day in and day out, and the different challenges that exist in working in different parts of the baseball world. My name is Mike Son, and I'll be your host. During my day job, I work as an ergonomist, a scientist who studies how people work. In my spare time, I write about how muscle fatigue influences baseball pitchers. My goal is to talk to those who work in baseball, find out how they got into their jobs, and how they solve their everyday problems and excel in their roles. Our guest today on Day Games is Ashley Stevenson. Ashley is the third baseman for the reigning World Silver Medalist, the Canadian Women's National Baseball Team. Ashley is kind of the Canadian female version of Bo Jackson, a one-time CIS National Championship Finals MVP with the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks hockey team, and a world-class baseball player. Ashley currently teaches phys ed and coaches hockey at a high school in the Greater Toronto area. I caught up with Ashley to talk about the excitement of traveling around the world to play baseball and competing against the top teams all around the world, but particularly the ones from Asia. We spoke about the grueling training she has to do and the huge time commitment it takes to work a full-time job and be an international level athlete at the same time. Ashley, welcome to Day Games.
Thank you very much.
Kind of walk me through what it's like on the days that you're working with the national team, you know, getting ready for games, practicing, all those fun things.
Well, we're actually together. Days are really exciting. It's kind of the work that goes into it ahead of time. That's the kind of the grunt work or the grueling days. But when we actually get together, it's pretty fun, and it'd be very similar to what I'm assuming a major leaguer would go through. So we arrived in South Korea, I want to say 3 or 4 days before we even played our first game, which was nice, gave us a little bit of a chance to adjust to the time change, which was fairly significant. And then we got to see the facility, have a couple practices. One of the diamonds was all grass, and then one was completely artificial, minus like where the bases are. So it was interesting. The ball plays much different, and we're not used to playing on any kind of artificial surface. So that was difficult or challenging to get used to a little bit. Ball skips off a little bit quicker than on natural grass. So those days we just did 2 days. So we had a full morning practice for roughly 3 hours. And then we had lunch during the day, and then we'd go back for BP, but that was on just the BP diamond. So the facility had four fields. One was strictly for warm-up, one was strictly for batting practice, and then the other two fields had games on them at all times. But on game day, you had one of three different time slots. You could play the morning game, the early afternoon game, or the late game. Morning game was really challenging. We only had it once, thank goodness, especially if you were a home team, because you bat first. And so it's tough, because you'd have to be up 5:45, 6, because you got to get to the diamond probably 2.5 hours before game time just to have your BP. So then the other team has time to get their BP. So actually, we didn't even take our batting practice the one day we were morning. But early afternoon, we had most of the games were early afternoon. We had two evening games. You get up in the morning, kind of they tell you your time slot for breakfast. You can wander down between the first about a couple hours. You get down, have breakfast. My roommate was Kate Soda. She's also been on the national team since 2004. we often went for a walk. So we were lucky the facility was awesome. Right across the street was the beach. So we'd walk the boardwalk, you know, just chat about who we were playing against, if we remember any faces, since a lot of the teams have some returning players, what we think we might see. Just chit chat. And sometimes we didn't even talk about ball. We just talk about other things, get our mind off it. And you always go to the game. You leave for the game minimum 3 hours before game time. Take your batting practice, take your in and out, and then you play the game. Come back after, you have dinner at the hotel. We usually had a meeting, if not that night, the next morning, depending on when we played the next day. We always debrief quickly, and then you get the scouting report and what we think the starting nine will look like for the other team and who we guess is pitching, because they don't have to announce it until right before game time. They have to tell us if it's a right or left-handed pitcher, but that's it. They don't have to tell us who it is. So we just take our best guess and our scouting, and have a scouting report ready, kind of go through that.
You mentioned you're a veteran on this team now, and you know, you've got some teammates who are even, you know, 17 years old. I was reading. How has your role changed with the team compared to back in 2005 and now? And how much has your professional life kind of bled into it, being a teacher in your day job?
Yeah, like I think like naturally, I'm a leader, but I didn't necessarily. We had all kinds of veteran leadership in 04 and 05 when I was first starting. So I didn't necessarily need to take on such a vocal role. I always play hard on the field and kind of lead by example, just the intensity on the field and stuff like that. You know, but more and more lately have a bit more of a vocal role, especially with some of the younger girls and making them feel comfortable. I remember I went to my first ever Hockey Canada camp when they invited me to a selection camp, and I was one of 30 players, and it was my first ever time being selected. And I think I was 20 years old or 21 years old. And I just remember being so incredibly nervous. And one of the players, Cheryl Pounder, I knew her a little bit from school. She went to Laurier as well, but she was a few years older than me, so I never played with her. But I knew of her, and she's from Mississauga, where I was from. So, and she was fantastic. She was so good, took me under her wing. Always made sure I had somebody to sit with, always made sure, you know, I was recovering properly. And it doesn't seem like much, except when you're new or when you're the young kid, it's so stressful, things like that. And I don't think I realized that in 04, 05, because I knew a lot of the girls that were on the team. I think I was more focused on what I had to do to maintain some playing time and to be really successful at that level. And now I know, I'm familiar with what you got to do in the off season, what you got to do to keep yourself in, you know, in game shape and in the lineup. So just trying to remember what it was like in that situation where I was incredibly nervous and looking for some guidance, and maybe trying to do that a little bit more. I think I've lightened up a little bit. I was still very intense on the field, but I was probably 100 times worse than most people would agree to that. So just realizing a little bit more about than just focusing on my game and what I need to do to stay at that level and what I need to do to help the team. Now, there's so many things that you can do off the field that really help people and help the team prepare. So I think just a bit more of a general focus, as opposed to a bit more of a narrow-minded focus of a younger athlete, I think.
And you mentioned, you know, the recovery and the training. How much of your focus or in the off season is on training for baseball, and how much of is it? I'm not sure if you still play hockey or if it's general health. Are you doing a lot of baseball specific training in your off seasons?
Yeah, so I'm always active. I'm a phys ed teacher, so I promote health and wellness as part of my job for sure. But try to get to the gym minimum 4 times a week. If not, my goal is 5, and I can include cardio in there. If I can't get to the gym, I can get in, you know, a 30 minute to an hour run. And that's something physical for the day. And my job's pretty active in general, but in terms of the actual gym, I try to get there 4 times a week minimum. And like, it's just so important, especially at my age, to be able to stay in shape and to play every single day and to demand that of your body every single day. If I didn't do that, there's no way I'd be able to continue to play at that level. But, you know, obviously I do it more for baseball purposes. Like I do it for general health, but I likely wouldn't hit the gym as much or as hard if I wasn't still playing ball. I'd probably do, you know, a bit more circuit training stuff as opposed to powerlifting still. You know, probably more leisurely runs as opposed to interval training and things like that. So even though I would still be active, it would just be a slightly different focus, maybe a little bit less intense. And maybe in some ways probably a little bit more enjoyable, but I realize that it's a means to an end and I still want to play at that level. And I know what it takes to still be there. And in fact, I have to work harder now than I did when I was 24, because 10 years later, your body just doesn't react the same way. So, you know, so if anything, I'm working more in the off season now, and then we do, baseball specific stuff. So definitely once a week minimum, sometimes twice a week. So it adds up pretty quickly. The gym four times, if not five times a week, a little bit of cardio in there. And then in actual indoor training, probably once to twice a week. So that eats up almost every single day. You get maybe one day off a week.
Now, against the different international teams, you know, you'll see it in the World Baseball Classic coming up. The different countries have really different styles of play. And even in hockey, you know, you see European style hockey is more speed focused, North Americans a little bit more physical. Have you noticed that there are really distinct styles of play in women's baseball for the different nations?
Oh, absolutely. Australia and like up the top, there's probably six teams that are at elite levels compared to the other teams. And that's not to slight any team by any means. I know that everybody's looking to improve, but Japan has been at the top for years. They're phenomenal. They run a professional women's league and it shows. Like they are absolutely fantastic and at most days look absolutely unbeatable. Like you've got to play your best game and you're going to have to hope that they have one of their worst games in order to beat them. And that's just the honest to God truth. So they're fantastic, but they play small ball and they are so good at it. Even when you know it's coming, they can still bunt for a single or like I play third base. So for example, their four batter was up. She had already hit a home run in the tournament because, and one thing that they did that I thought that was really neat there, they moved the wall, the outfield wall in 30 feet. So it doesn't seem like a lot, but it meant that there was like seven home runs hit. I don't think a home run was ever hit before that in World Cup play. But I think seven home runs were hit or something like that while we were away. And so 30 feet, because down the line now it's 300 feet instead of 330. And that's a huge, huge difference for us, but it didn't bring it in so much that it looked like little league, like it wasn't embarrassing, but it was a good amount that you got a hold of one and you could clear the fence, which was fun. So she had already hit a home run earlier in the tournament. So I respect that. And, you know, typical four batter, a little bit of a bigger player and not a ton of speed. So I'm backed up like fairly deep behind the baseline. She has two strikes on her. So now I even take a couple more steps back. And she lays down a bunt with two strikes. They're four batter. And it was like perfect. It couldn't have been better. Even if I was playing like just two steps behind the line, I don't know if I would have got her out. Like I would have had to Donaldson barehand that and gas it across the diamond to get her. And she was there by a mile. And I just remember looking at my coach and thinking, what? Like nobody else on the planet would try that. But they're so good. They practice that all the time and they're confident in that. You know, if I'm playing Team USA, Team Australia, that plays a game more similar to ours, you know, run when you have a chance to run, and your typical 1-2 batters have a bit more speed, your 3-4 are going to be, you know, your big hitters, like they stack a lineup similar to how an MLB team would, same with us. So I'm not as worried about them doing that, if at all. And, but Chinese Taipei plays a lot of small ball. Japan plays a lot of small ball, some Latin American countries. So Cuba, Venezuela, they'll play some small ball, but not as much as the Asian teams in particular, but everybody kind of has their own style. The Latin American teams go in waves. So they'll come at you if they have one big inning, it's hard to stop the bleeding, but, if you can get them down and out, they have a tough time clawing their way out of that. So they're kind of like a bit of a roller coaster. Japan, you could be up by 4 runs, and it, there's no change in their game. They'll play the same way for 7 innings because they have total faith that what they do is better than what you do. So they'll play the same way all the time. And then, like I said, Australia and the U.S. are similar to us. They have a couple big bats, some good arms on the mound, and they try to play, you know, solid D. So that we stack up very similarly, our three teams, and then the other teams are play a little bit more small ball than us. But Asian countries play all kinds of small ball.
There's got to be something said about that, though. I'm looking at the medals from the World Baseball Classic, the men's, yeah. And once again, Japan has 2 gold medals. South Korea's got a medal in there. Cuba has another one. So, you know what? It is pretty fun to watch home runs, but maybe there is something to be said about the small ball approach. Speaking about the different hitting approaches. There's a video, I'm not sure if you saw it, of Josh Donaldson talking about his hitting approach this season, and he went super into detail about, you know, trying to generate lift on the ball and that. Is that a similar strategy that you would take into your at-bats? Are you trying to, you know, clear that 300-foot fence there, or is it kind of just more of a, you know, take what you get type of an approach?
So mine's different. We do have girls who could easily launch that. Like, we had girls in batting practice who were consistently clearing the fence. However, it's coming in your wheelhouse and you know exactly what's coming, so you can. But we didn't have anybody on our team hit one over the fence there. So that's not our approach. If you get a solid pitch and you put a great swing on it, we could, do have girls who could put it over the fence. But by no means is that our approach, because those guys are so strong and you know, pitchers are throwing the ball so hard that if they just put the barrel on the ball, then they'll have a chance to get it out. I watch highlights regularly and I think in my head, that guy was out on his front foot. How did he hit that over the wall? But it just has so much carry and they're so strong. So, you know, it's a totally different game. And our approach is completely situational. I'm a pull hitter. For the most part. However, I was batting a lot in the two hole. And so if a leadoff runner gets on, you know, my job is to now look the other way because I'm trying to move her. Obviously, if I get an inside pitch where I want it and I can rip it, you know, out to left, then that's what I want to do. But for the most part, I'm going to look for a ball over the plate, try to keep my hands inside the ball and shoot it the other way. But it's all kind of situational, right? Like if I'm the leadoff hitter in an inning, I'm going to be really aggressive. Like I'm looking for one pitch. My pitch ideally is a fastball. However, the Japanese pitcher Sato, who pitched to us in the round robin game and in the finals, she had a curveball that she went to for 60% of her pitches and went to early. She was trying to get up with her curveball and finish us with a fastball, you know, 3 inches off the plate that was going to look even faster once we'd just seen a steady diet of curveballs and changeups. So it's a little bit how Estrada works, right? His fastball is 89, you know, 90, and guys look like it's like 96 because that changeup is so potent. So she was doing similar things to us, so had to change an approach, right? Like I was sitting on a curveball, which I don't typically do, but she was showing signs that she was trying to get ahead of us early. So tendencies, like you kind of adjust like your approach based on what's happening in the game. Are you up? Are you down? Are you up with runners on base? How many out, right? So I know it sounds a little bit cliche, but, you know, if I'm up, obviously I'm going to try to, I'm an aggressive hitter. I'm trying to hit one of the first 3 pitches. I don't want to be down in a count. I don't see necessarily a ton of pitches. So I want to see, if I see one I like, I'm going to go after it. Some girls on our team like to see a lot of pitches and that kind of works for them. For me, I don't think it helps me. If I see a fastball, that's what I want. I'm gonna try to get my best hack in there. But yeah, I typically have been batting more of like a 5-6, and so with runners on base, now I'm looking to get, you know, string a single or something like that, so we can string a couple base hits together and score some runs. But he had me up in the two holes for the World Cup, and so I was trying to hit a lot of balls the other way or up the middle. So I mean, this off season I'm working a ton on small ball, because I agree with you, there's something to be said for a lot of small ball, especially if I'm a pull hitter. If I get to pull that third baseman in to at least even with the line or a step in front of the line, because they're worried about me bunting. Then I think if I get around on a hard ground ball, it's going to be much more difficult for them to play it because they just lose so much ground if I pull them in, right? So all kinds of things you do to try to improve your game so you get a little bit of an edge.
Just thinking more about the day-to-day process of playing for a national team, what would you say is the hardest part of your job that, you know, maybe other people wouldn't think about when it comes to somebody playing on the women's national team?
I think anybody who's committed to playing at an elite level, the biggest thing or issue they would have is just finding enough hours in the day to be able to commit to something. So like my day, I typically get up at 6 o'clock, get ready for school. I'm a high school teacher in Burlington, so I get to school by 7:30-ish. Our school starts at 8:40, but I'm there early, try to get a little bit of work done or just, you know, chit chat with colleagues, see how, you know, they coach a bunch of teams, see how they did the night before, et cetera. And I have my classes during the day, often running something at lunch, meetings with kids about something. And then after school, I coach. So I start with field hockey, then I move to boys hockey, then I move to boys baseball. So I start second day of September, and then I go all the way to the end of May. And I would probably go into June, except we're not allowed because exams are in June. And then, so tonight, for example, had a coach a hockey game after school, got home about 5:30, and then have to find a time to have dinner and then get to the gym. If you go to the gym for about an hour and a half, by the time you get home, shower, it's easily 9:30, 10 o'clock. We fill out daily logs of what we did, nutrition, what we ate that day, how active we were, stuff like that, how we're feeling, so we get an idea of how to track it so we can try to, you know, keep performance at a peak level. Or when you're down and you're feeling down, is it because you're not getting enough sleep, you're not eating properly, you're not hydrated, like what are those things? Trying to learn some tendencies about yourself. And I try to get to bed by 11:30, but sometimes you got to do some marking or some lesson planning for the next day. And then I kind of just do that like Groundhog Day for about 5 days. And every now and then I officiate. So I'm a hockey referee and I officiate in the OUA now. So I do lots of games in the evenings or on weekends. So I fit that in there sometime too.
I have a feeling, though, if you had an extra 10 hours, you'd probably be on, like, the women's national squash team, too. I don't think you like too much free time.
No, I've never had too much free time, so I'm not sure what it would be like. Every now and then, it's okay. I love my job, but I will enjoy a little bit of a break as well.
Deserve time off. Okay. You know, I'm sure you've got to go and get to the gym and to fill some more of that time in there. But last question, and kind of self-serving because I'm super interested in this realm. With all the advancements in the women's game that have come recently and talking about scouting reports, has there started to be any of the creep in of the like advanced analytics to the women's game, particularly like looking at pitching, like are there radar guns in the crowd and stuff like that that you're seeing as well? Is any of that stuff coming into the women's game?
Yeah, not nearly as much as the men's game, just because there's not as much money involved, right? And so we don't have full-time paid coaches who can do that. We do have really good scouting reports. So our coaches will go to the games before. So if we play an evening game, they'll be at the Ball Diamond all day scouting teams and stuff like that. So they have their radar guns out. They have their stopwatches out for pop times for catchers. We do all our run times. So from first to second. So, I mean, it's simple math. If your time beats their pop time, then you're going to be safe if you get a decent jump, right? So you have an idea of who can steal or you can send maybe in what situation. Same thing, we do first to third times, and so, you know, we'll take a look at during in and out, you'll take a look at the fielder's arms, who are you going to maybe test, you know, are you going to test the right fielder, are you going to test the center fielder, especially if they're going to right center to get the ball, stuff like that. And then we'll have radar guns easy, you can have that, and we'll easily know how fast they're throwing, you know, even in their warm-up somebody would be able to tell us that. But in your first at bat, you're going to figure it out in a hurry. For the most part, lots of the Japanese pitchers, some of the Australian U.S. pitchers can hit low 80s. And that mixed in with two or three other pitches is really challenging for us to hit. But for the most part, most women are in the most top, and women are in the high 70s with three pitches that they'll throw almost any time. So we have an idea, same thing, like I was saying, Sato was throwing 60% curveballs. Like, we can identify that even if just sitting on the bench, but we do have, like, our pitching coach calls pitches and has every pitch charted. So we have the pitcher who is off that day or who's definitely not up because she pitched the day before. She's doing all the charting and stuff like that. So, you know, if you want, you can go take a look at the chart and see that, you know, a 3-2, she comes with a fastball away every time. Or if she's 0-2, she wants you to chase high her fastball or in the dirt with a slider or whatever, right? So, so you can take a look at those charts. So there's tons of information. I don't think it's nearly as blown up as it is in the men's game. Even in hockey now, you look at the NHL, all kinds of things, right? But for sure, you play the matchup game as well. We have a couple lefty pitchers, and so we'll bring them in for situational things too. And you just have a good idea when you go to the plate what you're looking for, what she's throwing, and then what the situation is. But I don't think it's nearly as big as the men's game, but for sure, it's much improved since 2004. We had some information, but now you pretty much have all the information you need anyways when you hit the plate.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you go now because I'm sure I've set back a training regime by having you on day games day. But thank you so much for telling us a little bit more about what it's like to be on the National Women's Baseball team here in Canada. All the best moving forward with coaching and playing. And thank you once again for being on the podcast.
No problem. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate that.
Interviewing Ashley made me realize one thing. I'm not that busy. No matter how busy I think I am, I really am not that busy. It's clear that she's an extremely driven individual and the type of person that you would want teaching your kids at high school. Her work ethic is really something to aspire to. Women's baseball is not as common as its counterpart, softball, but I think that could change as more and more women are exposed to the game at younger ages. Day Games was brought to you by HelloFresh. Delicious, healthy food delivered for you to make in your own kitchen. Use the promo code ANTIKA50 for 50% off your first box, courtesy of your friends here at the Antica Podcast Network and HelloFresh. Day Games is executive produced by me, Dr. Mike Son, and Nick Dyka, with support from Kevin Kennedy and technical production by Natalie Stoberman.